Okay. We're going to begin, we're going to actually focus on chapter 20 in the Mor Nevuchim, which in the Schwartz edition begins on page 326. Let's go back a little bit. The Rambam at the very end of chapter 19, I'm going to be dealing exclusively with the Schwartz edition. On page 325, the last paragraph of the Schwartz edition, there he says, "Bedika zos ivyanu eselach kol shtei bayot." In other words, Rabbi wants to investigate two problems, two issues. Ha'achas, one is, ha'im b'tziusu shel ha'shoni hazeh b'chayeves shezeh yeh b'hechav b'kavonas b'chuvah. If in fact the differences we see in the different planets, different spheres, does this actually logically bring us to the necessity of positing that this thing was done intentionally by a creator? V'lo al derech hachiyuv, or shema zelom, right? V'lo al derech hachiyuv, or shema zelom b'chayiv. Or no, in fact, actually, it might be possible to explain the positions of the planets, etc., which appear to be arbitrary, not by invoking the concept of what's called an intentional creation. That's issue number one. That's what we've been speaking about the last few times. And Abaya Shniyahi, and the second issue, which the Rambam wants to address, is, "In mako haya b'kavon mechuvah asher yichad yichad zeh," if everything was done intentionally, and in an intentional act of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to use the language of the scholars, particularized, which means, you know, arrange the details. Ha'im b'schayev mizeh shezeh yischadesh l'acheda. Right? If in fact, does this mean that it has to be after what? After a vacuum, after enough. Heda means a vacuum, means none be. Or shezeh lo m'chayev, or it's not necessarily. Ela shemiyachdoi. It could possibly be that, in other words, this particularization, you know, could be eternal, right? Because actually, there's an opinion that understands that one could believe on one hand with the eternity of the universe, on the other hand, that particularization, you could believe on one hand with the eternity of the universe, and number two, on particularization. So I'm just going to explore these issues. Now, the question, which I think, I don't know if I raised it last time, but as we raised this time, is really, what is the Rambam doing here? I mean, the Rambam is already, right, mustered arguments in explaining, in fact, actually, that in fact, you know, that the seeming arbitrary arrangements or details of the universe, and the planets, suggest that there was a intentionality in creation. So why is the Rambam somehow bringing up these issues again and readdressing them? The answer to this is quite complicated, and as actually we go into the chapters, and we're going to see what the Rambam does. But the fact is what the Rambam is planning to do now is actually to look back at Aristotle and see exactly what is Aristotle's opinion. That's what the Rambam is doing. In other words, the problem is the Rambam now is understanding how did Aristotle understand, in other words, the notion of creation, and right. And how did he understand the concept of what's called natural law? Okay? And the Rambam actually devotes himself to this in the Plakim, in the chapters 20 through 24. And we will go back and explain how the Rambam is actually somehow revising these issues, which he addresses at the very end of chapter 19. Okay? So the best is yet to come. Okay, but anyway, let's go to chapter 20. And we'll go through chapter 20. I think chapter 20 is actually a difficult chapter, even though it's not so long. And we're going to have to go through it line by line. Okay? Okay, I'm reading once again for the Schwartz edition, Parakhov, the 20th chapter, page 326. Okay. So the Rambam says, through the translation of Schwartz, Aristo mochiach hechacha moifsis, Aristotle proves, rigorously, that natural things kulam enim korem bemikra do not happen by chance, by random. In other words, things don't happen randomly, but rather there's a natural law which dictates the natural world. Okay? We'll speak about it a little bit later. Today, modern science would certainly contest this. But the fact is that Aristotle, in the mind of the Rambam, has proven to us that the world has not come about through any type of accidental, probabilistic, or any type of a random process, but rather the natural world which we see is a consequence of a natural law. And the Rambam claims that Aristotle has proven this, which means has given a rigorous proof of this thing, right? Whatever rigorous means in Aristotle. Now, the Rambam is going to go into, he's going to recreate and present Aristotle's proof. Now, first of all, the language of Mikriam here is not the same language of Mikriam, which you spoke of before. Mikriam before used to be like an accidental property. It might be the same concept, but I think Mikriam means something that happens at random, something that's not a natural recurring process. Now, Aristotle notes that that most things in the world, right, follow a scientific causality. In other words, most natural things in the world, either they occur, they always occur the same, or for the most part, they occur the same. Okay? Right? In other words, the planets always go around, always appear, right? Appear and disappear. In other words, a person, now that's called masmidim. In other words, there's a certain natural process that, you know, never fail to take place. Leroy, as we'll see a little bit later, for example, most people are born with two eyes. Sometimes a person is born with one eye, but most people are born with two eyes. In other words, Aristotle says if we look at nature, most things either occur and reoccur 100%, right? Periodically occur 100%, or, you know, most of the time occur. So, like this, Hashemayim v'chol asher b'hem masmidim matzavam she'ena mishtanim. For example, the Tzva Hashemayim, the celestial objects, they're always doing the same thing. They never change. Kamo she'evanu, like we've explained. Lo ba'atz b'yoseyem, v'lo b'chlofas b'komoseyem. In other words, they themselves are the same bodies, and also they always take the same position. You know, we never see that the sun takes the place of Mercury, and well, there was Mercury at that time, whatever it is. In other words, the zodiac, everything always occurs with perfect recursion. Okay, that's what Aristotle's referring to, those things that occur all the time. They reoccur with 100% periodicity. Hadvar mativiyim shebetachat lagalgal. Now things that are below the celestial spheres, Chalkam masmidim, chalkam leroiv. Some things occur with 100% periodicity, and some things occur with a high periodicity. Not 100%, but you know, majority. Now, what things below the celestial spheres occur, with 100% periodicity? Hamasmidim kagod she'esh b'chamim b'sa'ev v'evin yoredes lamata. In other words, fire always makes something hotter. You never torch something up and it makes it cool. Cooler. For example, a rock always falls to the ground. You know, no one ever held a rock and it went up. So those are things which always take place all the time. Now, what about most people have the same features? In other words, for example, like the most people have two eyes. Occasionally, I guess some guy is born with one eye. But most people have two eyes, you know, two ears. In other words, the toughness, the structure of a person, occurs not with 100% periodicity, because sometimes a person is never born with a certain type of a boom, but for the most part, most of the time, people have the same type of, physical layout. Okay, now, so that's what Aristotle says, It's an observation about nature. So says Aristotle, the basis of this observation, which no one would dispute, became on Shepirotov Enum Alpi Mikra. Okay, to Yakula Bimikra. So he says like this: since the particular things, right, Enum Alpi Mikra, in other words, we see that these particular things do not take place randomly. In other words, means that we see. In other words, Kaitzi Yakula Bimikra, like this. He's making the following claim. If we look at the different parts of the world, we see that nature either occurs with 100% periodicity or majority periodicity. If that's true, then there must be what's called natural law. That's what he says. It can't be that the whole thing is random. What he says here, Kesia Kulub Mikra, means it can't be that. Kulam Mikra means it can't be that there's no natural law. No, with anything which occurs all the time. For example, if I take a rock and I let go of it, it falls to the ground. And every time I do it, it falls to the ground. I mean, 1,000 times, 2,000 times, it falls to the ground, right? Then you can't say that it fell to the ground, that it was just a coincidence, it fell to the ground 2,000 times. You have to say that there's a law that tells me that what? That there's a natural law of which a consequence of which is that a stone falls to the ground, and we call that gravity. So he says, Zois in Cain Hechacham Moifsis, Shenimsis Elo Eina Mikria. So therefore says the Rambam, in the name of Aristotle, this is an absolute proof that there is something called natural law. Now, just to give a little bit of a historical overview of this, this was, in fact, actually the opinion, right, of most thinkers until I think sometime in the maybe 18th century. When was Hume? He was thinking it was in the 18th century, right? David Hume.
But why not Newton?
No, Newton didn't deny this.
Which Nakuda?
No, the Nakuda is like this. Most people understood that there exists something called a natural law in the world. In other words, why does the rock fall to the ground? Because there's something called gravity in the veldt. And gravity is something in the real world that requires the rock to fall to the ground.
So it's Hume who first broke the...
So I think Hume, who's I think in the 18th century, a Scottish philosopher called David Hume, who begins what's called, who's a type of what's called a skepticist, he claimed, no, not necessarily true. He made arguments which convinced most people at the time that you can't say with absolute certainty, mathematical certainty, that every time I'm going, in other words, that because I let go of the stone, it's going to fall to the ground, even though I've observed the stone fall to the ground 1,000 times. Who says that the 1,001st time is going to fall to the ground? Maybe the 1,001st time is going to float up to the air. In other words, what Hume did was he placed natural law, right? Right. He created a skepticism. He made us skeptical of the existence, right, of a natural law in the world. And he must have very strong arguments in doing so. And this was I think maybe the 17th century. He was in the 17th century. I think 18th century. I think between the... Whatever it is. He was around there.
In his statue, he's wearing a toga.
What?
In his statue on the high street, he's wearing a toga.
Oh, yeah?
He's not Greek.
Oh. Anyways, this was David Hume. Now, the fact is, I mean, this is the beginning of what's called skepticism, meaning that you can't... In other words, that Hume said, you can't make a claim that laws are inherent in nature, right? You know, that are certain, you know, with 100% certainty. This was you. Now, this put not only philosophy in a crisis, but it put science in a crisis. Because if I cannot claim with certainty, right, that there's natural law, so what is the basis for science to make predictions, to make claims? And this matter was in fact settled by the German philosopher, Immanuel Kant, who said, in hachinami, you're right. The fact is, there's nothing out there which determines the fact that the stone has to fall to the ground, but rather, man's mind is wired in such a way that on the basis of observations, man will naturally, right? In other words, man creatively creates a law of gravity through which he understands, he tries to explain, right, natural events which occur in him. In other words, the world into itself, right, has no, I'm using yeshivish language here, which, hechlech, in other words, there's nothing forcing, determining, right, in nature, nothing in nature determining that the stone will fall to the ground, but rather, this is the way man looks at the world. Man somehow has this transcendental by which he views, or he creates laws of nature. Natural laws are basically creations of the mind through which man views nature. That was the contribution of Immanuel Kant, and on the basis of this, most people felt very, very comfortable again. This placed modern science back on a firm ground, and weiter. Okay, one of the famous interpreters of Kant was in fact actually Hermann Cohen, who was the famous interpreter of Kant. And actually, I think Immanuel Kant's greatest critic was also a Jew too. He was a philosopher. What's his name? He was a famous Jewish philosopher. He was a big Eloi who went off the Derech. What's he called again? I forget his name is. And Immanuel Kant called him his fiercest critic. No. I forget his name. Anyway, whatever it is. What? No. He was a real guy. I forget his name. I actually have a No. Solomon, Shlomo Maimon. There's a very famous philosopher called Solomon Maimon, Shlomo Maimon, who was this big Eloi, who Eppes went off the Derech.
Kant
attacked
all these people.
I understand that. Because that was the interpretation of Kant. But in other words, Shlomo Maimon actually was chelek on Kant. And you should know that the Jews are all over this. I saw in this book on Rosenzweig and Heidegger that Eppes, like someone remarked, that Eppes Jews take to Kant. Kant is actually brisketeir a little bit. The Jews happen to take it to Kant, you know, Hermann Cohen and all these, whatever. Okay, anyway, in the case, Yeshiva Soloveitchik, Chaim. Okay, fine. Anyway, in any case, I think even make a bracha on Kant. Who's he make a bracha on Kant? I think that was, what was his name? Hirsch, I think Hirsch. No, probably Hirsch.
I think it wasn't him. I think it was his son or
something. Whatever it is, one of the Hirschians that you can make
him. Yeah, you say amen when you finished.
Yeah, make a bracha. Yeah, which shows nothing, but he just didn't understand who Kant was. But anyway, but in any case, but whatever like this now. Whatever it is, there was a stupid argument. What he felt was that, in other words, Kant proved that science is in the mind. What did Hirsch say that you can't make a book on Kant? Or whatever Hirsch. One of the Hirschians said you can make a book on Immanuel Kant, right? Because in the struggle between science and religion, so Kant basically says, science is not this absolute thing that you think is, there's something in the mind. And because of this, you can make a brach on him, but that's shtuyot. That's mamish mitzak vanya shtuyot. I mean, you read Hermann. Kant didn't say science was less certain. All Kant says that. The Betz of Leisa, Kant is the certainty which the mind thinks. Kant didn't make a claim that science wasn't true.
I didn't read it like that. The Hirschian statement that I read differently.
Yeah.
That he thought that it brought science and it gave science a place within the religious structure.
Why? Because science, I think why. Why? Because science is only in the mind. It's not really the emiss of the world. But that was not Kant's claim.
That's not how I understood.
All right, whatever. In any case, that's like people, that's like, the fundamentalist Christians and the Jewish Observer also too, they use Kuhn, Thomas Kuhn, to prove that science is not really true because they work by paradigms, which is also like just a total misunderstanding and proselytization of Kuhn. And Kuhn taught me in Princeton, he would go through the roof of here or something like that. I mean, that was ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. The fact is, at least in keeping it quite acute, science changes its paradigm. So it's mamish the whatever it is, anyway. In other words, they'll always use his philosophies as a way of... But what I say is, but this was Aristotle's point of view. In other words, Aristotle held that natural law is inherent in the world. Obviously, this is many, many years before David Hume. Okay, now. The fact is, now the Rambam is going to quote Aristotle. The Eilu Divrei Aristo, Negen mi Akad Moinim, Shetan Sh'oilu Mazek Kor B'Mikra, V'shu Ayamat Moi B'loi Sipa. So Aristotle now, he's quoting from Aristotle, well, actually he quotes from Aristotle. I'm not sure this is really the words of Aristotle, but it's the Rambam is probably summarizing Aristotle. That, in other words, one of the early philosophers wanted to claim that the entire world came about through chaos. Right? In other words, the world did not come about through natural law. Who am I? This, right? So Aristotle said, in other words, people have decided that the sky and all of the worlds, completely, in the entirety of the worlds, come about randomly. In other words, the entire macro world, the entirety of the world as a whole, right? Which is movement. Of course, we know that the largest sphere of the world is the source of all movement. This largest sphere came about randomly. Okay, this is a very difficult phrase. Let me explain what he's saying like this. Say the following thing. Like this. The people arguing on Aristotle are saying like this. Aristotle is saying like this. The people who argue and say that the world comes about through chaos, through pure probability, like this. They agree that if you look at nature itself on a microcosmic level, right? There's natural law. I mean, everybody agrees that two people, when they come together, have a person, not a chicken. Everybody agrees that if you plant a pineapple, you get a pineapple tree. You don't get an olive tree. In other words,
except Chazal.
What? Whatever it is. The Chazal is a hechatimnus in Chazal. Whatever it is. I know you were speaking about the Gemara of whatever it is. In Chayas. That's a hechatimnus in Chazal. The halacha. Okay, do me a favor. But the Chazal are coming to bring you aside. They're not coming necessarily to make, to whatever it is. But in any case, it happens most of the time at least, okay? Most of the time, Chazal, you can agree that Chazal will tree. The Nidma is an exception to Chazal at most. But, like this. In other words, they agree that if I look at the natural world, that's the immediate natural world around me, they agree that there's some type of a natural law. But if you take the entirety of the world, in other words, the heavens, how are the heavens produced? I mean, no one produced a sun. You don't see new suns being produced, or new planet Earth being produced. They'll claim that the entirety of the thing on a macroscopic level came about through random. That's what they claim. And Aristotle says it's ridiculous. Because Stigman A.B.A. But what's interesting is that we're going back to the interesting thing like this, because like this, you see, in other words, the Rambam said above, in other words, really, Ta'ika chosam and ha-sefer. Like this. Everybody agrees that the detailed, microcosmic, natural processes, right, exhibit a natural law. You plan things, when you let go of the rock. The question is, how did the entire universe come about? That we have no way of knowing. We don't observe, you know, creations of worlds, every few years. So on that there's the machloikas, on that there's the disputes. So Aristotle claimed that it's impossible that the details, the plotim, this is where the Rambam recreates the argument, it's impossible that the details, natural details, are subject to natural law, but that the entire shebang is not subject to natural law. Right? Le'umat, right? In conscious distinction to those who argue, and Aristotle said no. Right? In other words, there is natural law, but natural law comes about only after the first instant of creation. But the actual instant of creation, right, milchadchila, comes about randomly. That's the gist of the debate that goes on here, okay? So says the Rambam, Zeh nusach dvarav. This is the way Aristotle puts things. Now, of course, why are we speaking about this? Because the Rambam is not interested really in specific, the Rambam, of course, obviously is not interested in the details of the natural world. The Rambam really is interested in the creation of the entire universe. So in other words, because of this, in other words, Aristotle has to bring proof. In other words, we're going from the details to the general. In other words, because now the Rambam comes to shtach these people, to insult them, and of course he says Aristotle insults them, these people are just imagining things, they think that things happen randomly, these are just imaginations, right, these are, dreams, they're not really true. In other words, but we have to be rest assured that Aristotle has proven, no doubt about it, that in fact, actually, that everything that exists, including the entire world, right, is created, right, in accordance with natural law. In other words, the world is created in accordance with natural law. The world did not emerge, right, at random, or through some type of a random archaic process. Right, and of course the reason, right, that it can come randomly is because we see that there's a natural law. Because the whole world emerged through a natural law, so because of this, everything else, right, comes about through natural law. This was Aristotle's proving it, and the Rambam agrees with this. Okay, now, so very good. What Aristotle has proven is the world comes about through natural law. Now, natural law is a reality, and it doesn't first kick in after creation, no, but it actually is inherent when the world was created. Now, the question is, and this is what the Rambam is going to explore is, Aristotle believes in natural law. It means there's a natural law which dictates the creation of the world. So the question is, what does he not believe in? What does he not believe in? In other words, the Rambam speaks about a creator who creates things intentionally. So what is the dispute between Aristotle and the Rambam? Right? So that's what the Rambam says in the second paragraph on page 327.
How the world originates too.
The nature of the origin of the world. In other words, when the world was created based upon a natural law, or did it just pop up at random? Now, so Aristotle's proven it didn't pop up at random. It was created with natural law. So the question is, if this is true, what's the dispute between Aristotle and the Rambam? So it says the Rambam like this. This is the crucial thing here that the Rambam is coming to explain. In other words, like this. To say that the world comes about as a consequence of natural law doesn't mean, right, that it comes about as a consequence of will. In other words, will, desire, is not the same thing as natural law. Those are two different things. In other words, natural law is deterministic. Will is something different. In other words, how do we know? You know, just because the world is created based upon a natural law which deterministically brings the world into existence. But how do I know that there's a rotzon and a will of a creator who created by virtue of his will? Sure, let's say Yachan Abali de Mitzias. These are two opposite things. In other words, will is the opposite of determinism. In other words, they think one would think that they're the same thing. But in fact, actually, in other words, determinism means something has to be. Will, l'chayra, means, around Rabbi says a little on, it didn't have to be, but it was willed it to be, right? Aristotle believes that everything in the world is determined, but determinism is the opposite of will. Will means something happens by a free choice. Now, Lemaitse, this is the makor to a famous maimel of Moran Bala Pachet Yitzchak in Chanukah, right? There, Reb Yitzchak Hutnel, Zeke Tzad Levorcha, right? And a famous maimel distinguishes between Chochmas Yovan and Chochmas Yisrael. And there he says that Chochmas Yovan is Chochmas HaHechrech, and Chochmas Yisrael is Chochmas HaKhoifesh. In other words, in fact, actually, if Yitzchak Hutnel, of course, wasn't the Galas Mekairis, right? But his Mekar is Lechaira right over here. In other words, there's things that take place because they're determined, and then the things take place because of Rotzoin, which is really a consequence of free will. So says...
This is constant?
What?
This is a constant Mitzvah?
What do you mean?
It's like this always, that there are different... There are things that are willed always.
He's not speaking about the original creation of the world. Now, so what is Aristotle saying? The creation of the world was determined. The world is determined. But, so what do you mean to say God created the world? According to Aristotle, right, the world is determined by law, by logic. That's called chiyuv. In other words, it's not determined from God, because God is also subject to logic. In other words, in other words, if there's a concept, a law, a mathematical equation, we say that, x plus x equals 2x, right? So that means that, 1 plus 1 equals 2. That's what's behind the world. But the world, is that a consequence from the creator? In other words, the creator too is really subject to what's called seichel. In other words, which is natural law, mathematics. But the world doesn't come because the Kodesh Baruch Hu decided to create the world. Aristotle believes that God created the world, l'chaira. He says no. Who afilo omer shakel roitze es mashem es chay bimenu, sameh po bezanabov, lo yitachin shiyitze Mashu Shonet. Now, it's very interesting here in this statement. I mean, I don't know if Aristotle said it, but we saw this in the Timaeus. God wanted to make the most perfect of creations. Remember we saw this in the Timaeus? God wanted to make the most perfect creations. Because of that, he made a creation which, you know, has natural law. In other words, just like a person wants to have a kid with two eyes. He doesn't want to have a kid with one eye, with three eyes. So too, in other words, God wants a world that's going to be as perfect as he is. Or, in other words, as perfect as his mind imagines things. So in other words, this is very, very much bears resemblance to Plato's Timaeus. The concept is that God wanted to make a world that would meet up with God's perfections.
Is this Aristotle?
But in other words,
is Rome's defining Aristotle with this argument?
Right, because why? It's not the free will of God. It's a natural. In other words, this is called God's nature. In other words, God creates. In other words, God's act of creation of the world is a natural act, as natural as a person wants to photocopy himself. That's what he's saying. In other words, what is it? The Rambam says about this. In other words, if Aristotle believes that the world is determined, right? So, but how do you explain the fact? Given the fact that Aristotle believes that God created the world, the answer is God's creation of the world is not a decision made by God, but merely God's expressing the naturalness of his existence, meaning a world like Plato says in the Timaeus, which is just like him, which means it has perfect mathematical form, and that has all the perfections which you associate with God. That's the fact. That's what we saw in the Timaeus. But also, Adam ain't no bashtei anam v'shtei kapos b'tok avrosu who b'tok sheyichet tap nizdeus u'maisa elu. Inyan hakavod of inyan hayichet einam toisim elagabi dover bilti nimtza asher epsher shehol adei betzias lefi mashakufa nyuchad v'epsher shelo yavodei. In other words, says kavana means that basically there's a possibility that it won't happen. That we spoke about, that's called creation ex nihilo. It's a possibility that it won't happen. In other words, if something naturally happens because you have two eyes, and if you want to create something with two eyes, that's not called the God side. That's called natural law. You want to create something similar to yourself. But if, for example, something doesn't have to have two eyes, right, and you decide to create it with two eyes, there's a possibility that it doesn't exist until you create it. That's called kavod. That's called chotzer. That's what the Rambam is saying, which means
he's saying that Aristotle.
He's saying this is what Aristotle doesn't believe in. In other words, Aristotle believes that God creates only things which are like himself. Which
Aristotle believes in the eternity of the universe.
But God, no, he believes in the eternal universe, and the universe always was. But God is the first mover.
What was before it?
God, the eternal universe means God is ontologically prior to the world. Aristotle believes that when God pushes the world, in other words, he's always pushing the world. Now, so when he pushes the world, what forces him to push the world in a certain way?
But there's no moment of creation for Aristotle.
Right, fine. But there's a moment when God sets things in motion.
Not a moment of time.
Not in a moment in time that there's no world, but in other words, I could look for Aristotle. God created the world. He might have to constantly push the world. In other words, he's
but he's been doing it forever and ever.
Right. Okay. Now, when God goes like this and he keeps the world going, why does the world go in a certain way? How come the world is not different? So Aristotle says that God is subject to us creating a world which obeys divine natural law. In other words, there exists a natural law which is divine, which God is subject to. And when God puts the world into motion, whatever it's called, creation, this creation is determined by this natural law which God is subject to. However, says the Rambam, right, this means that when God creates the world, it's not creation out of will, out of kavana. It's not yichud. Yichud means that God has options, and God makes a decision to create the world like this and not like that. That Aristotle doesn't believe in.
So, So for Aristotle, God could be a science, a mathematical.
Anagami! Aristotle, as far as the realm is, Aristotle's concerned, God is an engineer. There's a plan, and God has to create the world according to this plan. Now, the plan might describe some natural aspect of God. But whatever it is, God is subject to this plan. But God never has to make a decision either to create the world or not create the world. That's what the Rambam is highlighting, is the difference between himself and Aristotle. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is the following thing. Don't confuse, and I'm using the Hebrew word, mischayev with kavanah, with rotzai. In other words, there's two concepts here. There's what's called determinism, there's will. Determinism, right? But determinism has nothing to do with will. Will is a decision made, or an expression of a decision made after there are two possible alternatives. Determinism means there can be only one alternative. There can never be any other possibility. Aristotle believes that the world is created deterministically, but the world is never created by will. In other words, the Boile is behind the world, right? In accordance with natural law. And the Boile's creation is beschaiv according to natural law. Will is the opposite. There's nothing that's beschaiv the world. On the contrary, the world doesn't have to exist. It doesn't have to be created. It doesn't have to be created the way it is. The will means that the Bashefa, the creator of the world, right, determined, made a free decision to create the world. Number one. Number two, create a certain way. That's what the Rambam is expressing over here. Now, the fact is that, just we finish here on page 328. He says, "Any day I am Ivino Elo Muchara Mitok Divri Aristo, Togmasha Oma Shadvom Elo Mucha Shetielem Siba, Sheperusha Shaldabo Zehakavana Vayichud." Why is the Rambam saying this here? He's saying, because it seems to me, what the Rambam is saying over here is that there must have been interpreters of Aristotle who confused Chiyuv with Rotzon. They confused the two things. They associated natural law with intentionality. And the Rambam is saying that natural law and intentionality are two separate things. They're not the same thing. This is a little bit, in other words, what we spoke about last time, we spoke about Ma and Eila and me, Mi Bara Eila. I mentioned the Zohar, Bishop, Son of Ajik, the same type of thing too. In other words, the scientific view of the world, which Aristotle takes, and even the creator is subject to this scientific process. And the Rambam is saying that in other words, this is in contradistinction to creation as a result of what? Free will. Where, in fact, there is nothing that forces the world to exist. There's this merely by virtue of the free will of the Creator. Now, once again, why is the Rambam saying this? He's saying this the last few lines, because there must have been people who misinterpreted Aristotle. Well, people understood that Aristotle, when he speaks about chiyuv, means rotzon too. The Rambam is coming to reject the point of view. Anyway, now, the question is, what was the point of the perek in light of the questions that we asked? Were things working? The question that we asked before that. So first of all, the Rambam wants to make very, very clear the distinction between what's called chiyuv and rotzon. Because that's going to be the chakira of the Rambam. The Rambam is going to address the question is, in other words, do the different things in the world, does the variation of the world, the seemingly, quote-unquote, unexplained variation of the world, is this definitely a proof of rotzon or not? So before I answer this question, it's important to know that there's a difference between chiyuv and rotzon. So I have to define my terms. After that, I can make a decision. In other words, does particularization, or do facts or details, are they a proof of rotzon or not a proof of rotzon? But before I know that, I have to know the difference between chiyuv and rotzon. So the Rambam basically is just defining very, very precisely what he feels is Aristotle's position. Which means what the Rambam really wants to say is that Aristotle cannot, I mean, ultimately what the Rambam is going to say is Aristotle cannot really account for details, right, unless he's going to invoke the notion of Rotzer. That's ultimately going to be the Rambam's, right, the Rambam's the point, but we'll see that in Mitzvah Hashem in a few more lectures. Okay, what time do we have left? All right, we'll stop over here. I think this is a good place to stop. And then, fine.